House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
Hello and you are very welcome to House of Rugby here on Joe together with Guinness. I'm Eimear Considine and I am joined as always by Ian Madigan. On today's show we have Leinster and Irish centre Sene Naupu and we are very excited to chat to her. However, before we get on to Sene, Ian, we're going to chat a little bit about the English game. What do you feel on the Monday after a defeat like that?
Yeah, it's tough after a game like that. You know, you come back in having played and, you know, I'm sure most of the lads' phones were pretty quiet. And then you obviously have to wear every time you bump into someone on the street or anytime you turn on your phone, you're seeing, you know, the negative kind of media reviews of the game. But, you know, for me, that was never the hardest part. The hardest part was always getting in and waiting for that review. And that's what I'd be, you know, stressing myself out over, going over in my mind, you know, what clips, you know, the coaches are going to bring up. Everything from, you know, how a coach looks at you when he first sees you on a Monday morning, you can almost get a vibe off him then, you know, geez, this is very negative. He obviously thought I had a poor performance, you know, individually, or he felt poorly about the team. And then, you know, you get into the nitty gritty of the review, which, you know, you're going to find out very quickly who you think is going to get another chance, you know, for redemption the following week. And you're thinking in your own head, oh, maybe they actually thought I did some positive things and I could be on for another chance here. I suppose for you, off the back of, you know, a tough performance, what would your kind of mindset be?
I suppose it depends, doesn't it, on when you've a game or if that's the end. You know, I know in 2018 we finished the Six Nations with our 2019 we finished with our worst ever finish in the Six Nations and we lost to Wales, and then you have to wait a whole year to rectify that. So I think Ireland are in a good position that, you know, they have Georgia next weekend and that they have a chance to and an opportunity to rectify and to actually build on that and to prove themselves, the guys that won't be happy with that performance that they just had. So I suppose it depends on the situation and what kind of a game you have. But I suppose it's never easy sipping into that analysis room. You know, you're always tougher on yourself, I feel like, than your coaches are, even though, God, sometimes I've got slated inside there and, you know, you don't know whether to laugh or cry because it's awful. And I suppose you're getting it from not just your coaches, you're getting it from the media, you're getting it from the from external sources like that. And it's difficult. I know we say like not to look at it and we say not to read those comments, but you always find yourself, and I don't know, do you do it too, but like I find myself looking for the bad stuff and you look for the negative feedback, and which makes you worse. You know, there's no benefit in doing that, but so it's easy for people to hide behind a screen and to say those negative comments. But you do, it's hard to pick yourself up. Like those days are difficult to pick yourself up from, but I suppose the English boys will be delighted with that performance and will have huge momentum going into the next game. But the Irish boys, and they'll need a good performance and a good game against Georgia next week.
Yeah, like there's no doubt in the effort at the weekend. And you look at the stats after the game, you know, we put them under a huge amount of pressure. We, you know, they had to make, I think, three times the amount of tackles that we made. And I'm sure that a lot of the Irish bodies are going to be stiff and sore off the back of that, which can make it tough to bounce back. The first thing you want to do is get back in, get training, get a good training week together and lead into a good performance. I definitely think one of the things that they're going to look at is, you know, when someone makes a mistake in the team, which is going to happen, it happens every single game, it's how you cover up your teammates' mistake. And, you know, we saw in the French game, you know, Jacob had one or two mistakes at the back that, you know, subsequently led to tries. And that has a negative effect on the game. Similar in the English game, you look at that line out in the first half, a simple overthrow, maybe the lift wasn't perfect, maybe Pete could have caught the ball. That leads on to, you know, Farrell getting inside out by one of the best attackers in the world and Johnny May. And then he scores what was, you know, one of the best tries I think we'll see this year. But it's very tough in a game like that in the first half when you concede a try that's off the back of individual errors. It's hard to wear those. You know, you carry them with you for 5-10 minutes within a game. Everyone's got their heads down behind the post. Whereas, you know, let's say the centre picked up that overthrow off the back of the line out, Ireland got their pick and go game going and scored a try off it, then those mistakes are forgotten about. And, you know, it almost has a positive influence on the team. So I definitely think that that's an area that they'll look to kind of tidy up, being able to cover the mistakes as best as possible.
Absolutely. I know I watched that try back again and the handoff on Farrell. Like, Farrell is twice his size, but Johnny May's footwork to get on the outside of him and to get that handoff, like, it was phenomenal. And then just to take the gap, you know, it's textbook rugby. You know, he got a soft shoulder, he got a fend on him, and then he took the gap and finished it extremely well. And I suppose there was some amazing English performances there. And going back to last week with Hugo, he said that the lines test would contain, I suppose, the whole pack, that whole English pack. And based on that performance at the weekend, I think he was right. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the English back row is incredibly strong at the moment. Even if you look at the guys who aren't in the squad, you know, or even the guys who are coming off the bench, like the likes of Ben Earl, you see him coming on and just going, geez, it's just endless, the talent they have there. But I think at the same time, you look at, you know, Caelan Doris the weekend, he was a, you know, real standout performer for us. He's someone, every time he carries the ball, he seems to find, you know, an extra 3, 4, 5 yards when he's engaged contact, which creates, you know, quick ball, go forward ball for the backs or forwards who are carrying again. You know, he's someone who, if he can keep building on the early form he's shown this season, there's no reason why he can't put his hand up for line selection. And, you know, there's plenty of other performers in that Irish pack that I think, you know, in the front row, I thought Porter was very good again. You know, he went the full stretch at 80, which, you know, showed how fit he is. Keane Healy will be right there again, you know, without doubt. But yeah, no, it is. It's tough off the back of a game like that when, you know, England had physical dominance for large parts of it to figure out how Ireland can kind of make up that gap.
Going back to the Guinness Six Nations, Andy Farrell does back his team and he thinks that, you know, they are within a chance of winning that Six Nations and competing for the Six Nations. We have France and we have England at home next year. But honestly, what are our chances? Like, what has to change in order for us to get a win against France and against England next year?
Yeah, certainly. Like, I would agree with him. You know, I think we start off with Wales, you know, away. I think we've had Wales' number for, you know, the last couple of years, the last few times we've played them. They're a side that's definitely in transition at the moment. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much they improve. But if you can go away to the Millennium Stadium and pick up a win there, I think we've Italy in the second game, you know, suddenly you're 2 from 2, and then we've got England and France at home where, you know, traditionally, in the last few years, we've been very good. But, you know, saying that, there's no doubt that there needs to be improvements made in how we're playing. But if you can get tweaks and find ways to generate that front foot ball, that's the key. And that starts at the set piece. The set piece didn't click at the weekend, be it line out or scrum. Off the back of that, the back struggled to get go forward ball, which made the carries much more difficult for the forwards. But if that set piece, which it will, clicks and provides a good platform, I think we've seen glimpses over the last few weeks of, you know, the creative plays we saw against Wales, you know, clever little movements, getting our blind winger in, getting second touches with our 9 or our 10, and, you know, really challenging defences that way. With our set piece taken away at the weekend, we weren't able to show that. But, you know, I think, you know, given another couple of weeks of the Autumn Nations, a few prep weeks, there's no reason why Ireland can't be, you know, back to their very best like we saw before the World Cup.
I absolutely agree. And I think that these games are the opportunities that those young and, kind of, suppose, not inexperienced boys, but those boys will get great experience playing in the Autumn Nations. And I suppose Georgia next week is, I think, a game that we might see a lot of new players, maybe guys that are uncapped. I personally would love to see Shane Daly getting a go. You know, he's a Munster guy who has really impressed up until this point. And, you know, the 15 position isn't really locked down at the moment. And I think there still is room for a bit of movement there. But who are the guys that you think, well, that you'd like to see next weekend against Georgia or get that chance?
Yeah, certainly. I think Shane Daly's definitely someone who's earned his opportunity to get a run out for Ireland. Personally, I'd love to see Stu McCluskey have a go. I think he's someone who offers something slightly different to the centres that have been playing there, you know, be it Gary, Bundy or Farrell in recent weeks. For me, looking from the outside in over the last few years, you know, he runs that kind of 9-12 kind of out the back play to the 10 or the winger. He's probably the best in the country at that. You know, the way he commits defenders, his accuracy with the pass, And also, if he doesn't think it's on, his ability to carry, you know, he's a really, really strong guy. He's got subtle footwork. You know, he finds a lot of, you know, soft shoulders within a game. And he's someone who you can go to time after time, and he's, you know, incredibly consistent. So I think it would be good to see what he can offer Ireland and see if it's, you know, a slightly different attack that he can bring. I think tied in with that himself and obviously Billy have been playing together for the last few years, you know, to see what that combination can offer, I think would be really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, we'll leave it there for part one and we'll be back with Sene for a chat in part two.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
So, Sene, how have you been throughout the lockdown? I suppose it was a difficult period for all of us, but in particular you, you went through that surgery after the English game. So how have you been after that?
Oh, I've been good, Eames. Like, honestly, challenging time for everybody. A few differences in my voice, so apologies in advance for, you know, people who might have known me before. I was a bit louder then, so I'm a little bit hoarse these days. So, but otherwise, all good. Thanks.
I really want to get into your rugby journey, and we will get to that at the end of the show. However, we're going to start off, I suppose, with the game at the weekend. It's fresh in our minds. It's Monday after the match on a Saturday. So I suppose initial first impressions of that Irish defeat to England. Sene, what did you think about that?
Well, firstly, fair play for James Ryan, you know, having the honours of captain Ireland for at that age against England and Twickenham. Massive challenge for the boys in general. So, yeah, tough day out for the lads. I think England obviously showed their dominance on both sides of the ball. And at the end of the day, you know, the team that wins momentum on attack and the team that wins momentum on defence and wins collisions, as well as the team, this is a quote from Eddie Jones, who said the team that kicks the most wins. They actually proved that on the day. But, you know, we showed some glimpses of positive play as well from Ireland, so I'm sure that they'll be working to build on those.
Ian, James Ryan obviously was captain. Had you played much rugby with him at Leinster? And I suppose did he look like he was going to slot into that position? You know, you would have, if you had played with him, what kind of a player was he to play with?
Yeah, firstly, great to have you on the show, Sene. Great to have you on. Yeah, James was just coming through the academy when I left. He was kind of just leaving school. But even then, I remember there was word coming through this, you know, second row from St. Michael's was the next big thing. I remember being in the gym one of the days and he came in and I'm just looking at him. I think he was maybe 18 at the time and just going, geez, he's a huge man for someone who's coming out of school. And even then, he looked physically like someone who could play professionally, you know, within probably a year and you know, very quickly he did that. But I think, you know, he nearly played, I think, for Ireland before he played for Leinster. And then once he started playing for Leinster, he went on this crazy win streak of something like 25 games in a row, unbeaten, and, you know, winning, you know, plenty of trophies along the way, you know, at the start of his career. So it's been a kind of natural progression for him to get to this point as Ireland captain. And I definitely think looking forward, he is the man, you know, to be leading Ireland going forward. You know, maybe not immediately now with the way that the opportunity presented itself. I think he was the right guy to go with, you know, the likes of Peter Mahoney kind of backing him up. And look, looking from the outside in, I loved seeing the fight with him, and, you know, there was no doubting, there was massive kind of will to win, and he was very passionate, but, I think tied in with that was maybe he might have forced things a small bit. Now he's an incredibly disciplined player and his stats are always through the roof. You know, he's one of the highest tackle counts. He hits a lot of rucks. He gets through a huge amount of carries. But I think he gave away four penalties in the game, which is unlike him. And maybe he wasn't trusting his instincts as well as he would have done previously. And I think the frustration of how the game was going probably, you know, got to him a small bit, but there's no doubting he'd have learned a huge amount from that game. And, you know, hopefully a slightly easier prospect for him to lead Ireland this weekend.
Yeah. And I did feel in the first half, you know, when we when we kicked the ball and when we looked for the space in behind in the backfield and played that game, we were very much in the game and England couldn't really deal with it. And it's interesting, I suppose, well, what the thought process is behind it as to why we didn't continue that kicking game. You know, obviously, it's very easy us looking on from the outside, but I felt like that kicking game was working originally, and I suppose the heat of the moment, it's hard to see that, but it's interesting that they didn't continue with that kicking game, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it can be hard as well. When you fall behind on the scoreboard and, you know, the game plan beforehand is to kick the ball a lot, try and play a territory game. But when you go 5 points down, 10 points down, 15 down, you know, it takes a lot to stick with that kicking game plan. You know, the natural instinct as players is, right, it's time to start chasing this game and you know, maybe playing from your own 10-meter line or your own halfway line. And England, they were just so strong and so physical and got over the ball so well that if they force you to play from the wrong areas and you're then getting turned over, before you know it, you're defending a 5-meter line out. And that's ultimately what England did at the weekend. You know, they didn't really allow Ireland to get into the 22 until, you know, deep into the second half. And at that stage, it was probably too late. I know a big strength of James Ryan being captain is how he plays, the style of play. Like he leads from the front. And that would be kind of very motivational for the players around him. You know, when you see him carrying ball after ball, making tackle after tackle, you know, his style of play is conducive to leadership. I'd say his job would have been, you know, definitely easier if someone of the experience of Johnny was there alongside him. You know, Jameson Gibson Park, obviously he'd have a good relationship with him from playing with him in Leinster, but he's, you know, only playing his second cap. I'm sure Pete would have been, you know, making a lot of the decisions around whether to go to goal or whether to go to touch. And if they are going to touch, what line-out options to go to. So I'm sure that, you know, that kind of counsel, and I'm sure, you know, CJ would have been stepping up there as well. But I think as well, not having an experienced hooker would have been challenging. Like, you know, Ronan Keller is definitely someone for the future. But to have, I don't know, someone like Rory Best there to go, no, look, we're not going to that line out. We're going to, you know, something a bit more simple, a bit more high percentage. Maybe it's not going to give us the best platform, but it's going to win us possession in the right area of the pitch. So it definitely was the way it was set up for James, it was tough to not have the kind of normal leadership structure around him on the day. But all in all, I still think he did a very good job, and it'd be interesting to see how he grows into that role.
Actually, to add to what you're saying, Ian, from a, you know, sidestep piece, an open play, I thought it was really interesting watching the differences between Ireland's attack and then England's attack from secondary lines of attack. So, you know, slipping in the back door, the detail that I thought England executed really well was how the depth, how flat that back person was, the back door was tucked in behind the first ball carrier, so that when that short line comes, it actually gets that gap in between the third defender, third or fourth foot defender, whereas, say, against, say, in other situations where maybe there might have been opportunities out wide, just the detail and the spacing and those sorts of things. But overall, what it did for England is it got it wide. So when it does get it wide, then they'll pick on Hugo for those kicks. So I felt that it was a busy day for our boys in the back three. But the fact that they were able to get the edges and the way they were executing some of the basic second lines of attack was quite pretty to watch, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I think when you've got guys of the you know, the strength and power of the English pack running those kind of hard down lines back against the grain, the Irish defenders have to respect the front door option. And then when it goes tight kind of out the back, whether it's to a winger or a centre, it does kind of split the defence. And I thought they did that really well. But yeah, on the back three stuff, Eimear, how do you think Hugo got on?
Yeah, like, I think he did well. I think he dealt with the high ball well. I think they did pick on him with those kicks, and I think they did target him as a 15. I think he, bar one mistake, I think he dealt with him pretty well, but they just hammered him. Like, he did not have a second. He was barely on the ground and they had him hit. There was two, there was three around him. And I think they targeted him, not so much in the air, but I think they targeted him on the ground and his ability to get the ball back. And they probably looked at Ireland and realised that our support to Hugo was slow the last day. And it resulted in a few turnovers. But I think overall he did well. You know, he was limited. He had very limited space with to do anything with the ball once he did gather it. But he did deal with those high kicks very well. So I think it wasn't because he had a bad performance at Stockdale. Come on, I think he was just battered for a finish. You know, he took some serious hits there. But yeah, it was great to see Earlsey back. I obviously am a big fan of him, and you know, he did have an impact, and I suppose the steady head and the experienced head of him there was a great addition to the team. And I suppose even for James Ryan to have someone like Earlsey on the field with the experience that he has, along with CJ and along Peter Armani, you know, there's plenty of leaders out there. And I think the young boys stood up. I think that was the main thing. You know, we did see Caelan Doris have a great game. I think Hugo Keenan did well, dealt with what he had to. Kelleher, yes, could have made probably better decisions, but I think all in all, you know, you have to look forward and there's no point looking back. And I think the future is bright. And I suppose that's the positives that we can take from the game.
Yeah, certainly. I thought Caelan Doris was brilliant again. You know, he offers something a bit different at number eight. He's got great footwork. He's got a good offloading game. He's someone who, like, it looks like he's going to get brought down to ground, and he always seems to be able to find an extra 3, 4, 5 metres, which then makes that ruck ball much quicker. And provides, you know, back with the other forwards carrying the much better opportunity to carry the ball. I think at the moment it's probably figuring out who are the best guys to go with him, because he's probably the informed back row in Ireland at the moment. I know Reece Ruddock's tearing up trees for Leinster week in, week out. You know, you wonder is there space for him to fit in. You know, and even up in Ulster, like Sean Reedy's been fantastic for us week in, week out. I think he's picked up like 3 man of the matches out of the 7 games we've played. So, you know, I definitely think that there's guys breathing down the necks of the back row that are there, which is great for competition.
Well, anyway, hopefully Ireland can pick up a win at the weekend against Georgia. Sine, you joined us on the show back in 2018, but for anyone who hasn't been listening or doesn't know your background, can you, I suppose, tell us a little bit about how you ended up here and your journey from New Zealand all the way to Ireland?
Oh, my ticket to Galway, was it? Connacht Rugby was the ticket overseas. Yeah, moved over about 10 years ago now, altogether, I think it is, to Galway first, from New Zealand. Short stint here for 6 months. Japan for a year, and then moved back to Galway and Connacht for another 5.5 seasons. Then a season with Harlequins in London, and then back to Dublin 2017. And I've been in Dublin or the Leinster area ever since. So, it's been a good adventure so far.
It absolutely has. So tell me a little bit about, I suppose, growing up in New Zealand and the other sports and the background. And so as you're raised by an amazing woman, I can say the same thing. But just, I suppose, growing up in New Zealand, what was it like, and how different is it to here?
Oh, you must give a shout out to Mummy Kay. Gosh, your mum.
She'll kill me. Yeah, I haven't mentioned her yet.
Yes. Ian, have you been to New Zealand? You've been to New Zealand, actually, I think.
No, I haven't. It's
really similar to Ireland, obviously, but just, it's similar to Ireland. It's just, obviously, it's a bit warmer. It doesn't rain as much. But, the outdoorsy, growing up, played all sports, and eventually was lured into rugby, loved it, and, kind of stuck with it ever since, really. Basketball was my first sport, but, overall, just really enjoyed playing rugby and being involved in the community and those sorts of things.
And you played at a pretty high level at basketball, didn't you?
Oh, like age group, when I was like 12 years old or 13 years old. But in terms of transferable skills, basketball is really helpful for, you know, other sorts of sports, especially rugby. But I loved volleyball and athletics and softball. cricket, backdoor cricket, so like loads of the sports. Everyone pretty much played everything. Quite similar here to Irish kids too.
It is, yeah. And I think, and obviously we had a discussion on the show a few weeks back about how our skills transferred over, but you're probably very similar and we can see those skills obviously on the rugby field with you. But I suppose what changed your, like what enticed you to play rugby when you got to Ireland? You played with, I think, Galwegians originally and then Connacht and obviously on the Irish Sevens and 15s teams. But what, I suppose, initially spurred you to go back and play rugby?
That's a super question. Because I thought I retired at that stage. I thought it was over. I was going to, you know, move forward on the next chapter of my life. But yeah, at the time I felt that I genuinely had more to give to the sport, and I think I'd gone through so much before that that it was now or never, really. So, yeah, put everything into training and, you know, trying to get involved and get selected for the squad for Sevens, and kind of grew from there, really. And I've loved, like, you know, learning different things about the game all the time. And I suppose now here we are. And now we're playing together for 15, Zimmer. So
I know, it's been
been a funny old journey.
It's funny that you thought you had retired. Like, it's mental to think that 10 years on, you're here with the captaincy of Leinster, captained Ireland at some stages, you know, a leader on our team, a leader on a lot of teams. And to think that, you know, you could almost not be here playing this game, which is really, really strange. But I remember my first Sevens tournament, we went to San Diego and I sat on the plane beside you. I hadn't a clue about rugby, like genuinely not one idea. I got landed on this last minute flight. I think someone got injured and I ended up going. But from the very first day, I feel like you've been involved in my rugby career. And then I thought it was very appropriate that you and I roomed together when we were in Dubai for our very first World Series Sevens caps. That was a very special moment, wasn't it? Dubai Sevens is a great, it's a great one if you're a supporter, and it's equally great if you're a player as well.
Oh, it was such a special league that was in Dubai, and really cool to room with you two. I've still got the photos of us taking selfies in the mirror.
That sounds about right.
God, I thought, Jesus, standard. But Ian, you'll know from playing a bit of sevens probably in your career.
Yeah, plenty of selfie photos.
I mean, the sevens, but we did do some training over there too, though. Yeah, that was a cool experience, wasn't it, in Dubai? And a lot of the girls kind of, yeah, helping us in that particular tournament. It's our first tournament, so jeepers, that was a while ago.
I remember Ali Miller gave me a dead leg in training, and I was like, this is my first cap, my first World Series cap, and Ali Miller's after giving me a dead leg. Like, nothing surprised me more than her doing that. And I remember I had the game ready, just trying to get on the field, trying to get myself on the field. Ian, did you ever see anything about the Dubai Sevens? Like, it was just party central, and I just couldn't understand that, like, this went hand in hand with rugby. It was my very first tournament.
Yeah, I'd have followed the World Series and I enjoy watching the Sevens, but it wasn't really an option for me to play, because there wasn't a men sevens team when I was, let's say, coming through the academy or in the earlier years. But it definitely was something I would have loved to have done if I could turn back the clock. Now the under-20s was probably the main focus for a team, and that's a great program in itself. But I definitely think now, like, the men's national team is beginning to get the fruits of the investment that they've made in the Sevens program, with, like, the likes of Will Connors coming through, Hugo Keenan, and I'm sure we're going to see it, you know, a spate of others coming through, and similar for the women's game. Like, for you guys, you know, you both came through the Sevens program and onto the 15s, and, you know, I think it's fantastic for the core skills of the game, you know, your tackling, your passing, your communicating, you know, your fitness. But I suppose as well, a question for you, Sene, like, did you find from doing the Sevens program and then going to the 15s program, physically, did you feel that you had to make a change to be, you know, stronger for the more physical carries, especially when you were playing in the center?
Great question. Initially, not really, as in, you know, we were going in between World Series and then I was fortunate to be, and Emma was the same, as in selected for Six Nations. So it was kind of in between the sevens. So we still had to, you know, ensure that we had the demands of sevens as well. It probably wasn't until I finished playing sevens, when, you know, fully focused on 15s, that, I probably, you know, had a bit more of an awareness of, like, you know, certain size or whatever it is to fulfill a certain role or whatever it is. But that was probably more myself as opposed to it being forced on from, like, an SSC point of view type thing.
I know when I first joined sevens, I obviously came from Gaelic football, and I think I was around 62 kg at the time, and the SNC at the time wanted me to put on a lot of weight, and I actually went from 62 to 72 in probably 2-3 years, and that was like 10 kg, which is a lot of weight to put on, but I suppose it wasn't all muscle and I wasn't really happy with where I was at the time. And over the last few years, I've only got to, it definitely wasn't all muscle. But over the last few years, I've got to a stage where, you know, I know I'm at the 70, 69 kg and I think that's where I'm happy. But I think there is, I think 15s does provide you with different demands to the sevens series, but, or to the sevens demands. But I think, you know, that's one thing as well. I think as female rugby players, there is different body shapes and there is different demands for different positions. And I know just from chatting to Leah and the girls over in England that I don't think you'd make an English front row if you weren't more than 80 kg. You know, there's demands in certain positions, and it's really interesting coming from Gaelic football where everyone is very similar. Maybe your midfielder might be slightly taller, but in general, everyone is the same size. And so people don't realise the demands that your sport has, and that I'm 10 kg heavier as a result of the sport that I play right now. But Ian, did you have to put on any, I don't know, was it the same for you when you first joined? I suppose we look at Hugo Keenan, he probably could do with a bit more weight at 15.
Yeah, like Hugo's a great example, because when he's playing sevens, you know, if he was, let's say, a stone heavier, so 7 kilos heavier, it's a lot of weight for him to be carrying with the amount of distance he's got to cover and the turn, you know, the turnaround with games. You don't want to be carrying that extra weight. But then when you come across to 15s, now obviously I don't have much experience with playing sevens, but I know from the 15s game, a lot of the tackles that you're receiving, it's 2-on-1 a lot of the time. You know, it's a different kind of tackle where you're waiting for your support runners to come in. You've got to keep driving your feet. Rucking itself is I think, it's much more of a contest each time because there's not as much of a jackal focus in the sevens. Hugo's probably someone who, you know, maybe an extra 3 or 4 kilos will be no harm for him to put on. But yeah, for me coming through, like most of the guys in the academy, I would have been, I don't know, maybe 80 kilos leaving school. And very quickly they said, yeah, look, you know, you need to put on weight, which I knew, like if I wanted to play in the professional game, I needed to put on, you know, a stone and a bit, but it didn't, I never felt like pressurized to do it. They said, look, try and put on 1 kilo or 2 kilos in the space of 3 months. And then when you get to that point, try and keep building on that. And similar to yourself, Emer, I got to 90 and then pushed to 92, 93. And I felt I was too heavy. I was maybe losing a bit of my agility, or it was just tiring for me carrying the weight. I didn't feel like it was giving me any extra potency in tackles or anything like that. And then I found dropping back down to kind of 90, 91 suited me better. And I've kind of just stayed at that weight for a large part of my career. So I think it's, you know, I'm sure you'll agree, it's something that you kind of find yourself, you know, and strength and conditioners can advise you as much as they want. But I think ultimately it's how you feel in your own body.
Totally. But the cool thing about it is, like, you've obviously got your fighting weight, and then Emma's got her fighting weight, and mine's actually changed, funnily enough, in the last 12 months. As the game's changed, you know, how, like, everything from attacking systems, defensive systems, they change all the time. And that's the beautiful thing about teams getting better and better, because then you've got to chase it and get better and better as well. So with that comes a kind of change in mindset that if you're needed to, you know, execute on certain things for your role for a different type of game, kind of, you know, might change your kind of mindset on, say, from a not a physical sort of sense, but a mental kind of sense. So, for example, since the last Six Nations this year, I found that my fighting weight is now, but that's a few kgs less than what I was. And it was just by fluke. It wasn't, I didn't intend for it to happen. But so now it's, you know, it's actually working better for me, but I didn't know that before. Whereas last year or the year before might have been that for our certain game plan, I needed to be a bit more, you know, whatever it was, heavier, whatever it is. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's also very interesting, not interesting, actually, it's really important that if there's any young girls watching this or whatever it is, to not be as conscious, you know, at the stage of your, if you're playing rugby and those sorts of things, because the main thing is that you're enjoying it. And, you know, for me and Emma, we're enjoying it at, you know, the, whatever our sort of size that we are at this stage of our career with the support of our SSCs. But, yeah, interesting questions.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Sunny. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you've done quite a lot of work with the body-wise, and I suppose in relation to body image and all that. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
For the last few years, I've been involved on the board of directors for BodyWise, which is the National Eating Disorders of Ireland. And it's been an interesting time in the last 6 months throughout this pandemic for so many, pretty much every charity in Ireland, and everyone involved. And yeah, maybe it's a great time to acknowledge all the hard work that's been going on behind the scenes by everyone involved and all of the different charities throughout Ireland. Super, super challenging time. For us, from a service provider point of view, a lot of our programs are done online. And so we've been able to do a lot of research behind different key themes of what's, you know, what are some of the serious issues. And they've jumped up, like, you know, from 150%, something ridiculous. So, yeah, it's been a busy time for our charity and BodyWise in terms of managing the services and the demand for services. So, yeah, it's a good awareness opportunity. So thanks, guys, for asking the question.
Absolutely, no problem. And Sunny, you do quite a lot of work with Guinness, and Guinness have done fantastic work this year in particular in promoting the women's game, I suppose, both by the first ever player of the tournament, and Emily Scarrett has won that, and deservedly so. What a fantastic player. She is definitely someone that I would look up to in the rugby world. And also by them promoting the women's jersey and the sale of the women's jersey in stores.
Yeah, Guinness have been a long time partner for the women's game, but obviously with the men's as well. I absolutely love working with them. And I'm not just saying it because I do, but the partnership between Albury's was and Canterbury was to support the sale of the jerseys, the old new women's jerseys. But a number of different campaigns that are, you know, going to spearhead, and just really fortunate to partner with them to help activate and support as well. So that's been really cool. Been a challenging time for pubs too these days. So, look, it's... yeah, it's fantastic to have someone like Guinness to support the women's jersey.
Yeah, it's great to see, you know, aspects like that, like the women's jersey coming out. Even, you know, recently with the provinces and the national team, when there's a photo call for a new jersey, that, you know, the women's team are included, and you know, I think that's great. Beamer at the weekend, you know, an all women's commentary team was great to see, and it was great to see it so well received as well. So, you know, going forward, like, what further improvements would you like to see, you know, within the women's game, you know, be it in the school system or even, professionally for you guys?
Oh, we've only got like 2 minutes, eh? Just, like, how long have
you got? Let me get my list out.
Yeah, I'll take notes.
super exciting time for the women's game overall. Like, you know, next year is a golden ticket for the women's game globally, with an Olympics and a World Cup within a few months of each other. Probably the only governing body to have that opportunity to grow the game is, you know, and it's already the fastest growing team sport in the world for women's sport in general. It'll be good first and foremost to get some games played in Ireland. That's the first step, isn't it? You know, to get our Energy AIL club up and running, and there's been some brilliant work done across all the clubs. Thanks to the volunteerism going on, who are the backbone of rugby in Ireland and sports in Ireland, really. But, yeah, it'd be just good to get some games back up and running, and ticking things over for the next sort of, you know, 8-9 months once we can, and even sooner into December with some of the trainings. But once a clear and, you know, pathway is established, and we can just sort of stay focused on what the international team needs to do, which is qualify for this World Cup, then that'll probably set things off for what will be an exciting few years for Irish rugby and women's rugby.
I've no doubt you guys will step up for the qualification. I was talking to Emer during the week. You know, if you guys do make it, the group draw has been, you know, reasonably favourable. I'm sure you guys are pretty happy about that.
The USA's and the Canada's, is it?
you've avoided the Kiwis, the French and the English. So looking from the outside in, it looked like it was a good draw.
I was looking at the other side as well. And even if we don't qualify originally, even that repechage draw isn't the worst. You know, I don't think it's the worst draw we could have got. I think we would definitely favour ourselves up against the USA. I think we played them in 2018, I think, in a November warm-up. And I think we've improved significantly. I think our systems are better. We have gelled as a squad much better. I think we definitely put it up against the USA. Canada are a different kettle of fish. I think they're a phenomenal team. They finished very well in the last World Cup. I think their sevens and 15s programs, they feed into each other, and they are a very, very strong team. But I suppose we have to get there first, and hopefully we can get some games played in the meantime. I suppose that's the thing we're looking forward to the most, is actually getting some games. Like, I think I personally have only played 2 games this year. Sene, you've played 4 games this year, I think, international games, is that right? You know, we haven't had a lot of game practice with Interpros cancelled, and obviously the AIL at the moment postponed. So I think that's the hardest part, is getting game time in.
I think we can all, you're right, Emer. I think we can all take some hope, though, from a team like Argentina. 0 yes. games, come out and beat All Blacks in their first game and draw with Australia in their second game. So, yeah, it's an interesting time, and it's like, might not get enough games, but in terms of, you know, the next game, it'd be cool to have the opportunity to play in them.
So, Sene, before our call started, we asked you to root around the house and find 3 things of rugby memorabilia for you for our House of Rugby challenge here today. So the 3 things that we asked you to find were: 1, a piece of rugby memorabilia; 2, a jersey you have swapped and held on to; and 3, something that you treasure that is non-rugby related. So we'll start off with the very first thing. So, a piece of rugby memorabilia that you found.
Gee, but these are some great questions. Mine would probably be, memorabilia. It'll be a jersey. Can I say this? It'll be probably my Barbarians jersey.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it would be my Barbarians, my first Barbarians jersey. We played England and Twickenham. The second one was against Wales in Principality Stadium. And the reason why that would be the top of my list, and the Barbarians is obviously a special club to be part of, but probably for what it represented, you know, in terms of all the clubs coming together, countries, because obviously this goes without saying that one of my most important jerseys is the Irish jersey. So, Barbarians would be my memorabilia.
Very nice. Was there any Irish woman playing that day with you, the very first time you played?
Yeah, Claire Malloy.
Oh, yes.
Number 7. Yeah. Oh, she's something else, she is.
No better woman to be standing there with. Which jersey have you swapped and held onto then?
So we actually... we don't really get the opportunity to swap jerseys, do we, Emma?
No, we don't.
It might be a bit awkward as well to take them off in front of people too.
But
not even afterwards. And sometimes, you know, if you get the opportunity to swap, but mine would be something I've held on to, and it's actually, I've got it here. Actually, as you said, it's you probably can't see it. Can you?
Oh, yeah, we can perfectly,
it's actually a newer version. It's the very first team I played when I was 13, North Otago Rugby. There's a sort of a jersey that is a special jersey to me, first team I played with, and my brother played for that team as well. It was like a provincial team. And I wanted to play rugby because of him. So it's It's my first jersey, and it's got 10 on the back as well because that was my first position.
Very nice. Ian, do you have any jerseys that you've swapped and held onto? Putting you on the spot now.
Yeah, I've swapped a good few jerseys over the years. We're blessed. We usually get given two, so usually get to keep one and swap one. I remember my first cap was in the Six Nations against France, and I remember Freddie Michalak was someone who I used to really look up to growing up, and he was, you know, at the other end of his career, and he came into the change room afterwards and said, look, he'd heard that it was my first cap, and he chatted briefly in my pigeon French and his pigeon English, and he gave me his jersey, which I thought was really classy and a moment that I'll never forget, you know. And I think that's something that's really special in our game. I know from talking to Callum Sheedy there, after his first cap against Ireland last week, Johnny went in and found him and said, look, I hear, you know, you've an Irish dad, and you know Mads from your time in Bristol, from his time in Bristol, and look, congrats on your first cap, and look, I'd love you to have my jersey and hold on to your own one, you know, do with them as you please. I'm sure Callum will get them framed, and it's something that, you know, meant a huge amount to Callum and to his family, and it is something that's really special in our game.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have a funny story about actually swapping, Senny. You'll get a kick out of this. The USA game that we played back in November 2018 was my first time coming back playing for Ireland after I took that year off after the World Cup. And Laura Sheehan actually got her first cap that day. And the USA girls were mad for swapping their gear. And they swapped, one of the wingers swapped her jersey and her shorts, and the shorts are fab. They're like these really nice Adidas shorts, women's fit, things that you can't get here. And I wore them to the gym the last day, and Laura Sheehan actually reminded me of this story, and she was raging because she said every time she looks at those shorts, it reminds her of that game, which was her first cap, and she got that length of the field try, a great try that day. But she was so busy digging into the cheesecake that we got for dessert that she missed all the jersey swaps and she missed all the kit swaps. And she's like, I'll never forget that day where I missed out on all the really nice kit because I was digging into the cheesecake. But she's like, it was worth it that day. The cheesecake was so good. So we actually spoke about it at the gym last week. It was so funny. But she'll kill me for that. So Senny, something non-rugby that you treasure, what is it?
Oh, this one is probably isn't in the criteria of what you're thinking I'm going to say. But I was going to say family. It's not rugby.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, probably my family is probably most non-rugby thing.
That's absolutely true. And it must be so hard. The majority of your family are on the other side of the world right now. And I suppose it's difficult. You know, there's obviously a time difference and there's restrictions all over the place. And New Zealand are pretty strict with everything, in Ireland too. It must be difficult, I suppose, not having the opportunity to go back and visit them. I suppose for the last few months, it must have been hard.
Oh, yeah, it's hard for everyone, eh? You know, sometimes some people we know can't even, you know, get to England or like go over the water there to see their family for different reasons within the COVID protocols and those sorts of things. So it is challenging, but it is what it is, and you just chip away with, you know, some of your goals and those sorts of things that you got here to sort of, you know, achieve and things. So yeah, it is challenging, but it's challenging for everyone.
It absolutely is. Well, Senny, it has been fantastic having you on. Thank you so much for taking the time out to chat to myself and Ian here tonight. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much, Senny. It's great.
Thanks for having me.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.
For the Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame this week, we asked you all to show us your most treasured jerseys, and we got some really great entries this week. However, the winner and the one that we chose was Kev O'Hanlon, who shared this fantastic snap of a little cute Munster stag created by the Laughing Nelly that has a really cute Munster jersey signed by Howlett and Maffey. So congratulations to Kev, and for that entry we have entered you into the Guinness House of Rugby Hall of Fame this week. So well done to you, Kev. So there was more Guinness Pro 14 games at the weekend. So I suppose first off, Connacht defeated Zebra on a 47-22 win. Some great scores and tries from Alex Wooten and Tom Daly. Ian, yourselves, you had a great win last night over the Scarlets. I suppose an enjoyable win. You had a crowd there for the first time in a while. How was that?
Yeah, it was great. Even, you know, having 1,000 people there, just even warming up before the game, having people watching you, and just creates an atmosphere and an energy within the squad. And, you know, a lot of the supporters, you know, reached out to us during the week leading up to the game, saying how excited they were to get in and see us and to be able to support us. So, no, it definitely added a lot to the game. And it was great to get another win. We're on a good win streak. That's 7 in a row for us now, and picking up another bonus point victory. But I think we know last night we weren't at our best. You know, we picked up 2 yellow cards, which put us under pressure. And, you know, having been 12 points up at halftime, we allowed Scarlets back into the game and, you know, made for a very tight and kind of tense second half. But, you know, in fairness to the Scarlets, they're a good side. I think they're getting better as the season's going on. They had a great win against Connacht last week in tough conditions in the sports ground. So, no, they're a side definitely on the up. And, you know, we're grateful to have not been at our best, but still have come away with a win.
Sean Reedy is another man that's got another man of the match performance. You know, he's been playing particularly well for you guys over the last few games. You know, what is it? I suppose, what's he doing differently this year? I suppose he's a really, really good back row, and he's continuing on this run of really good form.
Yeah, I think he's picked up, you know, 3 man of the matches so far this season. He's, you know, he's obviously played for Ireland previously, real attritional player. He's very clever, though. He's almost like having an extra back in the back line. He's like another centre. He's, you know, very subtle handling. He's got good footwork. He's a great communicator. You know, he'd lead large parts of our defence. So, yeah, we're certainly very lucky to have him. And, you know, he'd be someone that if he was called up to the Irish setup again, he'd certainly have earned it. You know, there's great competition in the back row that we have up in Ulster between, you know, Marcel, who's obviously locked in at number 8, and, you know, Jordy Murphy, another guy who's in great form this year. And the 2 Ray brothers, Marcus and Matty, who are pushing really hard as well. So I think that's bringing out the best in all 3 of them.
In your face lit up there when you were talking about Marcel. Is he, I say, some character to have around the pitch?
Yeah, he's the guy you want to have in your team. I think before I arrived at Ulster, he was, you know, he was talked about a lot, and, you know, I naturally expected a lot because there was, you know, internationals coming out and speaking so highly of him. But I think it's only really when you get to play with him that you realise how good he is. And his ball carrying is just ferocious. Every time he carries the ball, he's, you know, hurting people. He's going forward. But I think as well, it's his personality. He's a fantastic guy. He brings great energy every day. He's pumping up the guys' tires around him. And he's just a fun guy to be around. So we're very lucky to have him up in Ulster. And he's just, you know, performing for us week in, week out. So, hopefully it can continue.
Yeah, you always need someone like that on your team, I feel. And I suppose Leinster the other day, someone who was busy and all the time, you know, was Luke McGrath, another man in the match performance for him yesterday in that win, 45 win over Cardiff yesterday in the RDS. Leinster, they're just, I think the main talking point of the game yesterday was the youth that are coming through with Leinster. You know, their conveyor belt, like they had Sylvester come on, that Scott Penny got 2 more tries, Ryan Baird starting again. You know, it's just the quality that they have coming through, and they all just slot in seamlessly. And I think that was the main talking point. I think people are sick of talking about Leinster and, you know, their dominating performances. But this is the reason why. And it's that conveyor belt that people are so often talking about these days.
Yeah, certainly. It was great to see the all female commentary and support staff at the game. And, you know, it was received really well. So well done on that. The young lads coming through Leinster are quality. You know, the sub-academy and academy system leading on to a development contract is working really well. But I think that the pillar of their success over the last few weeks has been the likes of, you know, Luke McGrath, Reese Ruddock, guys who have aspirations of playing for Ireland and are pushing really hard to get back into the squad. They're playing out of their skin, and that's, you know, going to be driving on the younger lads. You can be sure that they're the ones driving the standards and training, and you can see that they're wiping the board with the teams they're coming up against.
Yeah, am I right in saying that Rhys captained Ireland to one of the games in the Rugby World Cup last year? You know, Rhys went from someone like that to dominating Leinster, and hopefully we do see Rhys getting back into that Irish squad, even though, you know, that back row is so competitive, it's hard to figure out where he would slot back in into that Irish team.
Yeah, I think he'd a slightly disjointed year last year. You know, he picked up, I think, a couple of hamstring injuries. But like, he's come back after the lockdown, and he just physically looks in brilliant condition. How he's carrying the ball, he's obviously been playing number eight a bit, but I know from playing alongside him, when he's playing number six, he just gets through a ferocious amount of work, you know, whether it's carrying the ball, hitting rucks, or, you know, making double figure tackle counts. And, you know, there's no doubting that he'd definitely add value to that Irish back row if he was called up.
So I suppose most importantly, Munster take on Glasgow tonight over in Scotstown. So we're hoping for another Munster win and another 7 out of 7 for the Irish provinces. It was great to see John Klein back in action, and really looking forward to that game. That's it for House of Rugby today. So cheers to everyone for watching and listening. A big thank you to producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, Ian, Anthony, and everyone that helped getting the show together. This has been House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Sláinte go fóill.
Sláinte.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Game changed.